From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. At 6 o'clock this evening, you'll hear live coverage here of President Trump's State of the Union speech broadcast from Washington, D.C. Stacey Abrams will give the Democratic response broadcast from Georgia. Bernie Sanders says he, too, will give a rebuttal online. And California's Attorney General Javier Becerra will deliver the Spanish-language Democratic response from his alma mater, C.K. McClatchy High School, in Sacramento. Now let's shift focus to the concept of freedom that in the United States allows this expression of many political views. Chris Collin has written about freedom in the most recent California Sunday magazine. He's joining us by phone. Hi, Chris. Glad to have you on the program.
Hi, Beth.
So the State of the Union speech is this evening with the follow-up responses reflective of many different political viewpoints. Can you put that into context in your exploration of freedom?
Yeah, well, freedom is always this sort of weird, hazy ideal that our presidents use to sell policy. And I think Trump's relationship to freedom has been extra interesting over the last, you know, year or so. I think his appeal to his base centers on his sort of embodiment of freedom, his war on political correctness and his disregard for cultural norms. That is sort of the essence of Trump, and I think we're going to probably see little flickers of it tonight, you know, when he talks about abortion rights, for example. That's appealing to a base that sees those issues in through the lens of freedom.
Explain a little bit more about the distinction you make between someone talking about freedom in a somewhat distant way, as opposed to what you say Donald Trump does, which is to say he is freedom. He says that to his followers, you point out.
Yeah, it's a weird disconnect because that phenomenon, him sort of embodying freedom, happens at a time when a lot of people in the country are very much finding their freedom diminished, their economic freedom, the prison industrial complex expanding, civil liberties decaying here and there. Whereas with Trump, I think what I've seen in my reporting is that the people who respond to him most see him as sort of the next step in the way our politicians sort of relate to freedom. With George W. Bush, we saw him talking about it all the time. The invasion of Iraq was couched as a freedom matter. And suddenly, Trump doesn't really talk about it so much. He's a guy who, for those who respond to this, he's a guy who does whatever he wants. And that is a very primal definition or interpretation of freedom.
And what's he saying to his supporters? He's saying, I am freedom from what?
That's a good question. You know, that gets at the very heart of the riddle that freedom is in this country, I think. We don't ever define it. We say we're the land of the free, and then it's sort of left there, and people can squabble over what that means. But from the people I spoke with in writing the story, there's a lot of fear out there that a way of life is slipping away in one way or another. And I think when you see someone sort of stand up to that in some, even in a vague, undefined way, you know, showing that they can be sort of whoever they want to be, do whatever they want to do, that I think for some is heartening.
Your article is titled Freedom Is, and then there's a blank, and that's the question that you approached people with across the country. Before we talk about some of the characters that you spent time with, I want to know whether there was a personal experience or some factor in your own life that inspired you to want to look at this concept.
Well, what inspired me was that I tuned it out for so long. I always thought freedom was just this sort of background noise that politicians would prattle on about, and also that you'd see in commercials, there'd be some bald eagle swooping around over a commercial for a car or something. And I just thought, you know, this is silly. This is just sort of this weird rhetorical tick that we have to live with in the background in America. But tuning it out means that you're not paying attention to all the ways it actually shapes our lives. Like I said, freedom was used to justify the invasion of Iraq, but it's also baked into the mortgage crisis that happened under George W. Bush. There it is in gun policy, in reproductive rights policy, in immigration policy. During Kavanaugh, we were talking about very much freedom and what he would mean for religious freedom, for example. So I realized I need to pay attention to this thing that we hear all the time. It's become sort of this background drone, but it's actually very interesting. And I think a lot of us in our individual lives have a sort of vague relationship to this concept. We want to be freer, but we don't really know how to do it, and we don't really know what that means at some level.
You've mentioned George W. Bush a couple times, and also the way freedom is used as a pitch for a point or a goal or an agenda. And you write, "There's a number I've managed to carry around for the past 14 years, one I've long suspected of saying something significant about our country. The number is 22. Chris, do you want to talk about what that number 22 means and how George Bush used freedom?
Yes, I got this number stuck in my head for so long. 22 is the number of times that Bush mentioned the word freedom during this 45-minute speech he gave to the Naval Academy in 2005. I did the math, and that's about one freedom every 2 minutes. And I really thought that just sort of said something about our country and the way we think and the way policy is shaped in this country. And from there, I just started digging down deeper and looking at all the ways that freedom is sort of deployed here and there, either politically or commercially. Religious leaders use it. It's sort of everywhere once you start seeing it.
I'm talking with Chris Collin. He's a contributing writer for California Sunday Magazine. His feature is titled "Freedom Is," and we'll post a link to it. So let's get to some of the people in the West that you talked to, people who in their own way, in their own lives, were using freedom to make change or to affect how they lived. Who sticks out to you most?
You can't talk about freedom in America without talking about guns. The NRA has really sort of seized on that concept more than anyone else, I think. And so I went to a gun show, and I didn't just sort of want to hear the rhetoric on both sides of that debate. I wanted to really talk to someone who, in a personal way, finds freedom to be a defining and moving ideal. So I was speaking with a woman at this gun show who helps run the gun show in Chico, and she arrived at her feelings about guns and freedom in very interesting personal ways. I think we all do have sort of a personal relationship to freedom, whether we've articulated it in our minds or not.
She's an example of the life experiences that we have that shape our views and then what we turn and do with them. You wrote about a woman named Libby Hunter. She is actually from Michigan, but she had an experience that she turned into action. Want to share a little of her story?
Yeah, this is one of the funner ways you can care about freedom, in my opinion. Libby Hunter is a former middle school choir director and music teacher who went to dinner one night at a restaurant. The noise was too loud, and she ended up eating outside. I think we've all been there where you realize the background noise, the literal background noise, is sort of annoying. And she found herself talking to an acquaintance that she knew at the restaurant, who told her about this movement that's all about freedom from piped music. So all of that sort of elevator music and top 40 music that you hear in cafes and bars and shopping centers and grocery stores and doctor's offices, getting away from that, which a lot of people in this movement feel like is a kind of mind control, getting away from that became her freedom cause. And now she runs something called Quiet Ann Arbor. She lives in Ann Arbor. And she has this sort of network of quiet enthusiasts. So I just love that sort of interpretation on freedom. She wants the freedom to just exist without hearing annoying music.
You went to Yreka in Northern California, which would be the capital of the state of Jefferson, and people looking for a different kind of freedom. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, well, the secession movement is very much a freedom movement, and in some ways it's a freedom from a sort of disenfranchisement that they feel there, and also that's wrapped up in poverty. And it's also, in some ways, a freedom, too. I mean, that's sort of our central divide on the freedom question. Do we talk about freedom from something or freedom to do or be something? And I think it's both there. And this fellow I talked to believed that secession would be freedom from this disenfranchisement that he feels and a freedom to live a sort of fuller, more realized life. And so, you know, you have a whole town that has really embraced secession as a means to freedom.
Chris, how much is geography a factor in how people view freedom? And certainly there is the long spirit of the West, you know, the freedom in the West, the place to pursue dreams. But even more specifically than that, anywhere, rural versus urban, what about just simply the land and the place around you being a factor?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think when we close our eyes and picture freedom, we tend to picture the open road. I mean, that sort of iconography of the open road is very much wrapped up in westward expansion, and that in turn is wrapped up in freedom. For some reason, when they show us commercials, when they're trying to sell us something and using freedom, they don't really show us cities. They show us, you know, the sweeping plains, the horizon. So for some reason, it's more of a rural thing. I think it's that sort of primal, wide-open spaces kind of thing going on.
For our producer, Bert Johnson, your piece really speaks to the urban-rural divide, which gets to a number of other factors in how we live. Did you see the story through that lens?
That was one of the lenses, for sure. You know, when you talk about that divide, you're talking about things like economic freedom and what kind of opportunities people have. And the impact of policy is very different in rural areas than in urban areas. And that's a divide that politicians exploit. So absolutely, you can see that playing out in really interesting ways.
And I'm going to jump from your concept of freedom to a bigger place where you add the idea of happiness to it. How did freedom and happiness correlate or not?
I don't know. That's my big question. I thought that was such an interesting, it's such an interesting part of how we talk about freedom. I think as Americans, we are inculcated with this idea that freedom and happiness are intertwined. And if you get one, you'll get the other. And it's an interesting way to set up a country, because we don't really have a clear definition of either word, to be honest. So I think in some ways we are all chasing this hazy ideal, not quite knowing what it means to get there, not knowing when we have it, but having the sense that if we get freer, we will be happier.
So what do we take from this? It can be great dinner table conversation or a great suggestion to start a conversation to talk about freedom, but we're listening to the State of the Union and many different speeches tonight. What are you going to be listening for, and what do we draw from this discussion?
Once you go down the freedom rabbit hole, yeah, you can find interesting freedom things to sort of pick apart wherever you look. It's got personal resonance for us, and of course, yeah, it's got policy implications too. So when I watch the State of the Union, sure, I will be wondering what he's sort of flicking at, what notes he's hitting, and how they will resonate for people who for whom freedom is something that's important. You know, just this week he had a call with the Faith and Freedom Coalition, and I suspect that will inform the way he talks about abortion rights. You can drill down into that group They identify as a freedom group. They also oppose same-sex marriage and medical marijuana, reproductive rights. They support limited government, which itself is sort of an interesting take on freedom. I think once you start, you know, looking for the sort of little coded cues involving freedom, there's a lot to pick apart.
Chris, thanks for the conversation and for your time. We'll post a link to your Sunday magazine piece on our website at capradio.org/insight. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks, Beth.
That is Chris Collin, and you're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.